Think about what it takes to build a modern fighter jet. Not design one on paper, not assemble one from imported components, actually build one from the raw materials to the finished aircraft sitting on a flight line, ready to go supersonic and survive in denied airspace. Now ask yourself how many countries in the world can do that without calling anyone for help. The answer is smaller than you think, and it matters, even if you never get within 100 miles of one of these aircraft. I'm Tower. This is ATIS on Radio Hangar. Today we're talking about 6th-generation fighter jets, the staggering industrial challenge behind building one, and why when you strip it all down, the United States and China are essentially the only two countries on Earth that could credibly go it alone. Today's aviation coverage is brought to you by AviationSoul.com, aviation challenge coins built to mark the milestones, discipline, and pride behind every step in flight. From first solo to airline transport pilot, every coin tells a story. AviationSoul.com. Let's start with a basic question. What makes a fighter 6th generation, the term? Gets thrown around a lot, and it's worth pinning down because the jump from 4th to 5th generation was already enormous. The F-22 Raptor and the F-35 Lightning II brought us low observable stealth and sensor fusion at a level that reshaped how air combat is planned. 6th generation is something else entirely. We are talking about aircraft designed not just to survive in contested airspace, but to dominate it in ways 5th generation jets fundamentally cannot. That means hypersonic capable speeds and the thermal management challenges that come with them. It means directed energy weapons, think airborne laser systems and high-powered microwave emitters as a primary engagement option alongside traditional missiles. It means electronic warfare suites that don't just jam enemy radar, but actively deceive and manipulate it in real time. It means the ability to operate as the quarterback of a loyal wingman fleet, commanding unmanned aircraft during a mission from the cockpit of the 6th-generation platform itself. And it means propulsion that no current engine in service can match. You put all of that together, and you start to understand why this is not a project you hand off to a single contractor or even a single country without serious industrial infrastructure already in place. Let's talk about the United States first, because that's where the clearest picture exists. The Air Force has been developing what it calls the Next Generation Air Dominance Program, NGAD. The Navy has a parallel effort called the FAXX, their next carrier-based strike fighter, two distinct programs, but they share a common foundation. The assumption that America's defense industrial base can absorb the cost, the complexity, and the classified technology development required to get these aircraft into operational service. Here is what you need to know about why that assumption holds. The United States has a depth of aerospace industrial capacity that no other Western nation can match alone. Start with propulsion. Pratt and Whitney and General Electric. Both American companies are the two primary engine manufacturers for advanced military aircraft in the free world. The adaptive cycle engine technology being pursued for 6th-generation platforms, sometimes called the Adaptive Engine Transition Program, is being developed by both companies under Air Force funding. An adaptive cycle engine can shift between a high-thrust mode for supersonic performance and a high-efficiency mode for range and endurance. That sounds straightforward in a sentence. It is not straightforward to build. It requires decades of turbine engineering expertise, materials science, and billions in sustained research investment. That's not something you stand up in 5 years. That is institutional knowledge built across generations of engineers. Add the airframe side of the equation. Lockheed Martin, Northrop Grumman, Boeing, these three companies alone represent a combined history of classified airframe development stretching back to the Cold War. The F-22 was built by Lockheed and Boeing jointly. The B-2 Spirit bomber, Northrop's flying wing that redefined what a combat aircraft could look like, was the product of an industrial chain so compartmentalized that contractors working on different subsystems didn't always know what they were building. That culture of classified long-cycle high-technology development is not easy to replicate.
Then add electronic warfare expertise. Add the silicon and semiconductor fabrication pipeline for advanced avionics. Add the material science infrastructure required to produce radar-absorbing composites at scale and with consistency. Add the test and evaluation ranges, Edwards Air Force Base in California, Eglin Air Force Base in Florida, facilities that take decades and tens of billions of dollars to build and operate at the level required for 6th-generation testing. The United States has all of this, operating simultaneously with the classified funding to sustain it across administrations and budget cycles. That is the industrial base side of the argument. Now let's talk funding, because numbers matter here.
open-source defense analysis, including work from the Government Accountability Office and organizations like the Center for Strategic and International Studies, has estimated that a sixth-generation fighter could carry a unit cost somewhere north of $300 million per aircraft, possibly significantly higher depending on capability levels and production volumes. Compare that to the F-35 Lightning II, which has come down to somewhere in the $75 to $80 million range per aircraft. After years of production and economies of scale, the sixth-generation aircraft won't have that luxury for a long time. Only a defense budget of the scale the United States maintains, over $800 billion annually, can absorb that kind of program risk while simultaneously funding fifth-generation procurement, updating legacy platforms, and sustaining nuclear deterrence. This is why even major U.S. allies have had to pursue collaborative programs. The United Kingdom, Italy, and Japan, three sophisticated aerospace nations, are partnering on the Global Combat Air Program, or GCAP, formerly known as the Tempest Program when it was a British-led effort. GCAP combines Japan's manufacturing precision and electronics expertise, the United Kingdom's airframe heritage from programs including the Eurofighter Typhoon, and Italy's production capacity. Three strong aviation nations, pooling resources, because none of them could credibly sustain a solo sixth-generation program on current defense budgets and industrial footing. France, Germany, and Spain are doing something similar with their Future Combat Air System, known in European defense circles as FCAs. That program has had well-documented tensions between partner nations, mostly disputes over work share and technology control. But the fact that three significant European aerospace powers are collaborating rather than competing on a national program tells you something important about the math involved. The math doesn't work for a solo sixth-generation program at their budget levels. Now let's talk about China, because that's the other half of this story, and it's a half that serious defense analysis does not dismiss. China is the one country outside the United States that analysts believe could credibly develop a sixth-generation fighter without outside help. And the reasoning is worth understanding, even with the important qualification that significant uncertainty surrounds their actual program status. China's defense aviation industry has made extraordinary strides in two decades. The Chengdu J-20 was a credible fifth-generation platform when it entered service, even if it still trails U.S. fifth-generation capabilities in certain areas. There are credible reports and some imagery of what analysts are calling China's next-generation contender, possibly multiple prototype designs already flying. What gives China the credibility to go it alone? First, scale. China's defense budget has been growing at a sustained pace that puts it second globally, behind only the United States. When you're spending at that level consistently across decades, you can fund long-cycle programs that require patient capital. Second, industrial capacity. China built a comprehensive aerospace industrial base as a matter of explicit national priority from engine manufacturing. Historically, China's weakness, where they long depended on Russian designs, to composites, to avionics, to radar systems. They have invested heavily in domestic capability precisely to eliminate dependence on foreign supply chains. Third, the structural ability to prioritize. China can direct national resources to specific programs in ways that democratic nations cannot replicate. If the government decides sixth-generation fighter development is the priority, the industrial apparatus moves in that direction without the friction of competitive contracting cycles, procurement legislation, or multi-year authorization debates. That said, and this is worth noting, the engine gap is real. Chinese aerospace engineers have historically struggled to match the performance and long-term reliability of U.S. and Russian turbofan engines. If that gap persists into the sixth-generation era, it puts a ceiling on what their aircraft can actually do operationally, regardless of how impressive it looks in external imagery. The engine is always where the hard physics live. Now, here's where I want to bring this back to something that connects to aviation more broadly, because you might be wondering why any of this matters if you're not a defense contractor or an Air Force acquisition officer. A few reasons, and they're worth taking seriously. The technology trickle-down from military aviation programs is real and historically consistent. Radar technology that started in military aircraft gave us airborne weather radar in airliners and eventually in general aviation cockpits. The global positioning system was a military capability before it was a civilian one. The composite materials that are now standard in aircraft like the Cirrus SR-22 and Piper M-Class series started life in military programs. Sixth-generation development will push propulsion efficiency, materials, avionics integration, and software in ways that will eventually filter into civilian aerospace, not in 5 years, but in 20 or 30. Second, the health of American aerospace matters for all of us in aviation. When major aerospace manufacturers struggle, and some have been struggling, the workforce, the engineering talent pipeline, and the manufacturing infrastructure that supports all of aviation takes a hit. A robust military aviation development pipeline is one of the things that keeps those institutions funded, staffed, and technically sharp. The NGAD program and the Navy FAXX are not just about future air superiority. They're about keeping the American aerospace industrial base alive and capable enough to build the next generation of anything that flies. Third, and perhaps most interesting from a pure aviation standpoint, sixth-generation aircraft represent something close to the limit case of what piloted aviation will ever be in a combat context. There is a genuine serious debate in aerospace circles about whether the sixth-generation fighter might be the last crewed combat aircraft in the traditional sense, or at least the last where the pilot is primarily a stick-and-rudder tactician. The loyal wingman concept, where unmanned aircraft operate under real-time direction from a crewed sixth-generation platform, points toward a future where the human pilot is a mission commander, a decision-maker in an autonomous system, more than a hands-on aviator in the way we understand that role today. That is a profound shift in what it means to be a military aviator, and those shifts in high-performance aviation philosophy have a way of rippling outward. Let me bring this back to the industrial question one more time, because the headline is really about capacity. The U.S. advantage in sixth-generation development isn't just money. It is sustained, deep, multi-decade investment in every layer of the aerospace technology stack simultaneously. Propulsion, radar cross-section reduction, electronic warfare, advanced manufacturing, test infrastructure, the classified enabling programs that develop technologies years before they ever appear on a production aircraft. China has built credible domestic alternatives across many of those layers, which is precisely why the defense community takes their sixth-generation ambitions seriously, even without full visibility into their programs. Everyone else? Everyone else is building partnerships. GCAP, FEAS, those aren't admissions of failure. They are smart, pragmatic allocations of national capability, but they do underscore the point. Two countries, two different industrial philosophies, one extremely expensive, decades-long race for the United States, it is worth noting that the NGAD program has faced some headwinds on cost. There have been reported discussions about restructuring the program given the per-unit cost projections. That's worth watching. If the U.S. pulls back significantly on NGA, the gap in next-generation air superiority becomes a real strategic conversation, not just a budget line. The Navy's FAXX has been somewhat more stable in that regard, given the specific carrier-based mission requirements that make it a distinct and arguably more bounded program. The fact that the largest defense spender in the world is having serious budget conversations about whether it can afford its own sixth-generation fighter should tell you something about what it would take for a smaller nation to attempt this alone. The answer involves either a very creative partnership or a fundamentally different national industrial strategy sustained across decades. And that, in the end, is the story. Thanks to Simple Flying and Aviation Week for the sourcing on today's topic. You can find more at radiohangar.com. Stay current out there.